Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 5th day of October 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall. Let's talk about what's been going on, or in some cases, what's been reported that's not really going on, but it's still grounds for impeachment. And somehow or other, given all the other news of the week, this first story seems like a really fitting way to start things off. It comes from investigative reporter John Rappaport under the headline, "The Prozac Mass Murders." Yes, the truth, imagine that, finally comes to light. And unlike killing a president or blowing up some buildings, in this case it only took 30 years. And I do like the way Rappaport introduces it, so I'll start the same way. If you were the head of a drug company, he said, and you had no conscience, that's a key fact, and one of your drugs was causing people to commit murder, and if many lawsuits against your company were still waiting to go to trial, and the first of those trials was now fixing to convene, and the verdict in that case would no doubt influence the outcome of all the other lawsuits, well, what would you do? Remember, if you had no scruples whatsoever, in other words, were fit to sit in Congress. Well, he says this is the story of a medical drug, a famous drug company, trust, betrayal, and of course, mass murder. And after 30 years, the truth has been confirmed. Eli Lilly, the maker of Prozac, secretly paid off plaintiffs in a key court case. The plaintiffs were families of victims killed by a man who went violently crazy after taking Prozac. Once, by the way, the most popular drug in America, before Viagra. The mass shooting took place in 1989 in Kentucky. Says Rappaport, I covered the case in 1999, 10 years later, by which time the Lilly payoff was an open secret among at least some lawyers, doctors, and a few reporters. And now, of course, there's even less reporters that will actually report on controversial stories. But we do, in fact, now have confessions from the plaintiffs who took Lilly's money. In the trial, Eli Lilly was exonerated and absolved of any blame by the jury. So here's what we know now. The Louisville Courier-Journal reports that 30 years after one Joseph Westbecker went on a deadly shooting rampage in Louisville, Kentucky, on September 14, 1989, killing 8 people and wounding 12 in the worst mass shooting in Kentucky's history. The families and survivors of his actions have finally come forward. Only took 30 years. I keep thinking that's amazing. To tell the truth, they were plaintiffs in a lawsuit against Eli Lilly because they had reason to believe, and a whole lot of dead people have even more reason to believe in the 30 years since, folks, that Prozac had propelled Westbecker on his deadly rampage. Now we know all kinds of other SSRI drugs, that stands for Selective Serotonin Reuptake Inhibitors, or antidepressants, you might know names like Paxil, Zoloft, or Luvox, have also been implicated in literally countless cases of mass murder and suicide since. What you don't know, of course, is how many of those are also involved in mass murders in ever more proliferating gun-free killing zones, because while they want to blame the gun, they're certainly not about to tell you where the real culpability lies, especially since Americans have had guns throughout our history, but we haven't had the mass murders or the gun-free killing zones until more recent years. And in spite of all the self-righteous blind idiots talking about the NRA, they obviously don't know squat when it comes to the true power lobbies like Big Pharma. Or, just as obviously, they really do, and they know who's writing their checks. The story then gets more complicated, as these things inevitably seem to do, after Eli Lilly makes the payoffs and then covers up the payoffs and continues the cover-ups for quite a while. Because it turns out there were several cases, and even some other drugs, like Oraflex, that Lilly withdrew from the market, that they still needed to keep things mum about, lest the Prozac jury figure it out and realize, maybe this is a pattern of behavior with this evil drug company. I mean, really, we can't have the jury figuring out that Eli Lilly has a track record of concealing damning truths about its drugs now, can we? Turns out that Circuit Judge John Potter, the judge in the Prozac case, suspected that Lilly had bribed plaintiffs and their lawyers before his jury verdict. He did uncover evidence of bribery and fought Eli Lilly for years, but finally failed to obtain proof of the terms of the Prozac payoff deal. So Lilly succeeded in keeping its criminal action from a judicial proceeding. And as is Eli Lilly's norm and practice, it then trashed the judge. And does this sound familiar, folks? For his pursuit of the truth. Because remember, judges too, like presidents, can be impeached. Rappaport goes into some more detail about the specifics of the case, noting that Prozac turns out to be the chemical trigger that pushed the murderous Westbecker over the edge from thought to horrific action. But in any event, no argument about motivations for murder justifies Eli Lilly's $20 million bribe to the various plaintiffs. Lilly, it seems, wanted an absolute slam dunk in the Westbecker trial to protect itself from the many other lawsuits where, no doubt, the role of Prozac in suicide and murder was even more vivid. And the point was obviously to send a powerful message to lawyers and plaintiffs about their odds of winning judgments against Eli Lilly and their SSRI Prozac. Because if Lilly was exonerated in Kentucky, as it was via the payoffs, lawyers in other cases would know, hey, it's a losing battle, you better back off. They'd see little point in trying to prove that Prozac was the grave danger that we now, at least some of us, know in hindsight that it not only was but remains. So somewhere in here, folks, I guess you could say there's good news. The truth has finally come out, even though it took 30 years and a whole lot of people have had to die in the interim, and the politicos and press are still pointing in the wrong direction, blaming the wrong people and the wrong tools. But today, at least, we not only know more about the why, which is obvious, but the how. From there, like it or not, I guess we have to go on to the other big whoppers of the week, and our continuing coup update, and how much the waste stream is still intent on making sure you're not allowed to know. Starting, I guess, with this one from the Gateway Pundit about Dirty Adam Schiffless, who broke the House rules. But that's not a surprise. He's certainly willing to break his oath before God to the American people about the Constitution. In this case, though, he withheld information on the partisan CIA whistleblower, if such a person actually really does exist, we'll get back to that in a minute, from the ranking member of the GOP. Can't have the opposition knowing about the dirty tricks in advance now, can we? It was just 2 weeks ago, begins the piece by Jim Hoft, that Adam Schiffless told MSNBC, no, he hadn't heard from the whistleblower. Maybe you remember this. Let's flash back to September 17th.
We have not spoken directly with the whistleblower. We would like to, but I'm sure the whistleblower has concerns that he has not been advised, as the law requires, by the Inspector General or the Director of National Intelligence.
As the law requires? That's almost funny in context, isn't it? Well, anyway, continues Hoft, Adam Schiffless didn't just lie to the liberal media hacks. He also lied to Republican committee members and, of course, the American people as a whole, withholding information on the so-called CIA whistleblower from the ranking Republican on the Intelligence Committee, which is a violation of their own rules, resulting in the ranking member, Representative Devin Nunes, having released this statement on the shifty tactics. Quote, we learned from the press today that Chairman Schiff had prior knowledge and involvement in the WB complaint. He withheld this info from the American people and even from the Intelligence Committee. In light of the news, it's hard to view impeachment as anything aside from an orchestrated farce. Unquote. Via Sean Davis, the Federal Intelligence Community Whistleblower Law explicitly states that the Intelligence Community whistleblowers must formally go through the ICIG before they contact Congress. In fact, those very procedures are cited in the document that various leftists have, oops, been tweeting about. And last week, it notes, former CIA analyst Fred Flight suggested that the whistleblower truly did have a lot of help with his report, which is increasingly undeniable. This follows on the heels of another embarrassing revelation, even posted by the New York Times, pretty much suggesting, as President Trump put it, that Adam Schiffless himself actually wrote the whistleblower complaint. So the New York Times is since out with a Wednesday article designed to put some distance between the House Intelligence, sick, committee chairman, and the accusation itself, suggesting that Schiff for brains had, nothing more than a sneak peek at what they were preparing to unleash. As the Times reports, the Democrat head of the House Intelligence Committee, Representative You-Know-Who, learned about the outlines of the CIA officer's concerns about President Trump and the alleged abuse of power, yeah, sure, days before the officer filed that whistleblower complaint, adding that the original accusation was vague. Well, hey, folks, it was hearsay, not admissible in court, so what do you expect? And the aide did not share the whistleblower's identity with Schiffless or anyone else. Think about that, and we'll come back to it, as I'm hinting again and again. So according to the Times anyway, Schiff kinda sorta knew what the whistleblower said, and a House Intel Committee aide told him or her or whatever to go get an attorney, and it turns out to be a Dixie Mafia Team Clinton insider, Andrew Bakaj, who, as you may recall, interned for anti-constitutionalist Chuckie Schumer in the spring of 2001 and for Hillary Clinton herself in the fall of that same year. But the Times felt really compelled, and maybe it's no wonder why, to explain that nothing even remotely untoward could possibly have happened. Funny, they don't extend that same courtesy to the president when it comes to international relations. Just in case you're curious what the Times originally reported, and it's been backtracking on ever since, the breaking news, they said, was that the so-called whistleblower, quote, gave an early account of all allegations against President Trump to a House aide who outlined it to the shifty one who's now leading the impeachment inquiry. Meanwhile, the president is clearly gunning for Schiffless, saying he should be forced to resign for reading that parody masquerading as fact, allegedly of the Ukraine call at a congressional hearing, an act which Mr. Trump has called treasonous and criminal. And technically, folks, it's seditious. It's making war against the American people, which he's also doing in the process, that's outright treasonous. Said Mr. Trump, we don't call him Shifty Schiff for nothing. He's a shifty, dishonest guy. In this case, the president's being too kind, your host interjects. And the Times is now claiming that Mr. Schiffless never actually saw the full complaint. What, he didn't read it after he wrote it? You gotta wonder. Nor did he know precisely what the whistleblower would actually deliver to Mr. Atkinson. He has plausible deniability, in other words. Elizabeth Harrington, spokesperson for the GOP, has now said, quote, the disgraced liar Adam Schiff's committee directed the so-called whistleblower to get a lawyer before he filed the complaint. And who did they hire? A Joe Biden donor, Schumer and Clinton attorney. And she correctly summarized it, total con job, saying subsequently that people should take CIA coup attempts very seriously. Finally, says the Zero Hedge coverage of all this, if all of this process seems vaguely familiar, it's probably because it is. As the Federalist Sean Davis writes, this is a carbon copy of what happened with Christine Blasey Ford's bogus accusations aimed at sabotaging the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. Quote, House Dems provided the anti-Trump accuser with guidance and legal advice before he went to the ICIG and then leaked his allegations. In other words, quote, it's the same playbook. Which leads me to some really interesting observations, and I guess so far we have to call them speculations, but as he points out, they're looking more and more solid by the hour. Earlier today, writes Mike Adams for Natural News, President Trump declared that he believes the shifty California scumbag at the head of the so-called House Intelligence Committee wrote the so-called whistleblower complaint himself. But the official whistleblower complaint story is unraveling by the hour as new facts emerge, pointing to perhaps a far more shocking likelihood that Adam Schiff may have fabricated the very existence of the whistleblower himself, in effect projecting his own complaint onto a fictional persona that he's now going to question in a private, closed-door congressional session where basically he will be talking to himself, which shouldn't surprise any of us. The scenario isn't yet proven, he notes, but it's looking more and more like Adam Schiffless may have pulled a Jussie Smollett, and instead of tying a noose around his own neck and faking a hate crime, he may have fabricated an entire whistleblower persona and then written the complaint himself in a psychotic, desperate effort to try to destroy Trump before the Attorney General William Barr drops the mother of all bombshells about Democrat involvement in a vast criminal conspiracy to try to overthrow the President of the United States. And why it's all second-hand or third-hand hearsay to boot. Says Mike Adams, Schiff knows that if Trump isn't stopped, a long laundry list of left-wing traitors will likely be prosecuted. Well, I guess that remains to be seen, but it's something to be hoped for. And jailed. That list might include Adam Schiff himself, who's been linked to Ukrainian arms dealers, and Joe Biden's son, of course, who's now known to have received at least $3 million in criminally obtained laundered money transferred to his business accounts as part of Joe Biden's not only quid pro quo, but outright shakedown of international oligarchs and mafia organizations. Don't forget, continues Adams, that Barack Obama himself laundered billions of dollars internationally in order to fund Iran's nuclear weapons program, a clear act of criminal treason against the people of the United States. And let's not forget furthermore that this entire whistleblower hoax has been masterfully orchestrated by a combination of deep state intelligence players, left-wing media hacks, and Democrat legislators who are all playing their roles as crisis actors, feigning outrage over a non-crime being called a crime, while they call crimes, they don't even talk about those, and even resorting now to the complete fictionalization of a whole new transcript of what they hope or suggest Trump probably said on that phone call with the new president of the Ukraine, which Adam Schiff actually read into the congressional record, trying to gaslight the entire nation about the truth here. In other words, it's pretty obvious that the leftist Bolsheviks in charge of what used to be the Democrat Party have gotten to the point where there's simply nothing they won't do to take down President Trump at any cost. And Adams does close with a kind of humorous observation, if there's anything funny, about outright treason at just about every level of the deep state criminal swamp. In a kind of hilarious way, he writes, Adam Schiff must be God's gift to Trump's re-election efforts in 2020, as much as Mad Maxine, who's now calling for President Trump to be arrested and tortured in solitary confinement. So who knows, maybe Adam Schiff for brains may yet succeed in bringing the whole stinking criminal mess right on down. Meanwhile, though, folks, what we're seeing wouldn't even make a believable parody of a banana republic. Meanwhile, we're just getting started with news on the treason front. But again, it's Judicial Watch who's actually doing the heavy lifting. You can't count on the rhinos in Congress, that's for sure. Conservative watchdog group Judicial Watch, writes Christina Layla for the Gateway Pundit, obtained 145 pages of former Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein's communications that reveal a very damning set of information that probably explains why they didn't want this stuff coming out, including an email Rosenstein himself sent to none other than the chief witch hunter, Robert Mueller. The documents were obtained through a FOIA lawsuit, and it turns out that on May 12, 2017, just 5 days before the infamous Mueller was appointed a special counsel, Rosenstein assured the man that, quote, listen to this carefully, folks, the boss and his staff do not know about our discussions, unquote. And the Rosenstein documents also show various off-the-record leaks to the likes of 60 Minutes, the New York Times, of course, and the WAPO on and around the date of Mueller's appointment, said Judicial Watch. This, of course, was in the very same time frame, between May 8th and May 17th, that the disgraced Rosenstein met with then-acting FBI director, the disgraced and now fired, thankfully, Andrew McCabe, another senior Department of Just Us and FBI officials to discuss wearing a wire and trying to use any means necessary. In this case, they were talking about the 25th Amendment to try to get rid of President Trump. They failed then, and they're obviously still in various ways and at all levels working hard to get it done one way or another, by hook or by crook. And think about all the crooks involved here. And there's still more, but this one at least really is funny. Remember that House Congressional Democrats have written the State Department, as of last week, to request testimony from career officials concerning the Ukraine, well, if they'll talk about the right things, obviously, and not mention Joe Biden at all, and to demand that Trump State Department officials turn over requested documents on the Ukraine. Earlier this week, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced that he would refuse to allow State Department officials to testify before congressional committees when it comes to impeachment. And that was after Democrats in the House violated fundamental principles. Which ones, you might ask? There's so many. Well, in this case, it was contacting State Department officials directly to tell them that they don't dare try to contact legal counsel. And Democrat lawmakers also requested documents from the Pompeo State Department on the Ukraine. Now, here comes the punchline to all this. Today, the State Department did send over the documents, but they were hardly what the leftists were expecting, because the documents ended up containing a huge amount of information about Hillary Clinton's collusion with Ukraine concerning the 2016 election, and Joe Biden and his crime family's massive pay-for-play, quid pro quo, or outright extortion, with the Ukrainian regime, put in place, of course, under Barry Sabarko's regime. As Jim Hoff puts it, zing. On to other news next that turns out to be arguably related and may help us connect a few dots. Right on the heels of creepy Joe Biden having finally gone down, although not for everything he deserves, it's Bolshevik Bernie who seems to be the next to fall. The 78-year-old wannabe Soviet socialist dictator was in Las Vegas when, according to an official campaign statement and the Associated Press, he experienced chest discomfort during a campaign event on Tuesday and sought medical evaluation. Thankfully, of course, he wasn't in a socialist country, so even in America, he still managed to get decent treatment. But I guess if he had been, he would have gotten care that none of the peons could have expected anyway. Two stents were successfully inserted into the aging communist, and now the Sanders campaign says their comrade is conversing and in good spirits. But they note, after the heart procedure for the blocked artery, he was canceling campaign events and appearances, quote, until further notice. And here we pause to reflect on a couple of major differences this year from the lead up to the 2016 election, when Hillary Clinton herself had some discomforting, disquieting, and outright disqualifying medical emergencies that were almost completely covered up and certainly denied. And of course, if you actually saw the video, you must be a conspiracy theorist anyway. But in contrast, in her case, the fix was already in, and medical emergencies weren't going to derail it. Whereas when the shoe is now on the other foot, medical emergencies are going to be a big deal, so you can probably count Bolshevik Bernie out at this point. And I got to tell you, folks, your host has seen a lot of speculation over the last few days from the likes of Steve Bannon, who does predict that, yes, Hillary will emerge from the crypt or wherever they've been keeping her and run in 2020. After all, she's just waiting for the field to be thinned a bit. And, of course, for leftists to breathlessly call out her name as their one and only savior. And as much of her competition seems to implode, whether it's via self-immolation or, who knows, an eventual Arkansas or two. Like it or not, it does at least seem increasingly possible that Hillary herself may end up being the, let's put it this way, last witch standing. And I have to admit, I had really decided I wasn't going to do this story, but after a lead-in like that, I can't really pass it up, can I? Courtesy of Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge, the headline says, Hillary finally admits she really is a real witch. Because the capo de tutte capo of the Dixie Mafia, who has yet, you might note, to actually endorse any other Democrat presidential candidate, among increasingly widespread rumors that she intends inevitably to throw her own, well, black pointy hat into the ring, now says that any renewed State Department investigation, how dare they, into her illegal private server, which was allegedly blind copying a Gmail address bearing the name of a Chinese company, in case you don't hear the real news, is, in fact, as she puts it, a real witch hunt. So, ergo, think of it as kind of a backdoor admission. Quote, it's a witch hunt, Clinton told Now This News. It's a real one, unlike the kind of things Trump talks about. And if it's a real witch hunt, folks, well, it looks like they're finally on the trail of a real witch. And I guess, since we're already pretty much there, this story fits too, courtesy of Big League Politics and Shane Treho, also Todd Starnes of Fox News, who interviewed the evangelical pastor from Dallas, Dr. Robert Jeffress, who's been recently quoted by the president when it comes to the inevitable and coming Civil War 2.0. And during the course of the discussion, the inevitable came up, possible satanic motivations behind the far left's extremist agenda, prompting the pastor to say, quote, that reminds me of an arsonist, a pyromaniac with a match in his hand, about to set a building on fire, saying, now pray with me that the destruction I'm about to cause isn't too severe, he said, and added, if Nancy Pelosi is sincere about bringing this nation together, she will drop this impeachment effort, and of course, we all know the answer to that. Yeah, don't hold your breath. Well, said Starnes, we just assume they're praying to God. I'm not quite so sure. And here Dr. Jeffress said something your host has honestly been saying for quite a while. If you go back and look at Scripture and understand what it actually says about Molech worship and child sacrifice, and how that's precisely what the left has been doing when it comes to the sacrament of baby killing, a.k.a. abortion, but especially of the late-term and now post-birth variety, it's hard to deny the obvious. Said Jeffress, apparently the god they worship is the pagan god of the Old Testament, Moloch, who allowed child sacrifice. The god of the Bible, he said, doesn't sanction the killing of millions and millions of children in the womb. I think the god they are worshiping is the god of their own imagination. And maybe here he's soft-pedaling a bit as well. What's interesting, though, is that the rest of the Big League Politics piece points out leftist after leftist coming up and saying, they think it's tongue-in-cheek, things like, yeah, don't f*** with our god, Moloch, and fellow liberals, I regret to inform you that Fox News has discovered our worship of the pagan god Moloch. Why, the next thing you know, folks, they'll be coming right out and saying that all of this is a genuine witch hunt, or something of that sort. As if it's an inside joke, and every now and then, we don't actually catch them when their lips are moving. But what's coming out, amazingly enough, is the God's honest truth. Sometimes it even hides in plain sight. And we'll pick it up there when we get back. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. This is still your host, Mark Call. And sometimes to get your head around the really big and really fake stories, you have to start with the smaller, but also really fake stories, because they all point in the same direction. Case in point, this one comes from Paul Joseph Watson via his Summit News and Prison Planet. After a 12-year-old African-American girl admitted that she lied when she said that a group of white boys, racists all no doubt, and probably white supremacists, had cut off her dreadlocks, the New York Times, which, along with lots of the other fake news outlets, had reported breathlessly on the story, decided to strip out the incriminating information that pointed out just how full of it they were. They removed the fact that the accused were white from their follow-up headline. Says Watson, the global waste stream media, he says mainstream, but I like the other term, as you know, as well as so-called lawmakers like Rashida Tlaib, amplified one Amari Allen's falsehood after she claimed that three white male classmates had pinned her down, called her nappy and ugly, and then cut her hair, which prompted the usual wave of sympathy for Allen, a lucrative GoFundMe campaign, and a volley of resentment towards the racist young white men. In the vast majority of these media reports, the fact that the boys were white was part of the headline, but it subsequently emerged that Allen had faked the entire story, with her grandparents, as of Monday, apologizing to those falsely accused. However, in the media reports that carried that update to the story, the fact that the entire narrative was predicated on the incident being a racist hate crime was, imagine this, folks, somehow stripped from the story. Said Watson correctly, the media seems very keen on obscuring the fact that they helped to inflate yet another race hatred hoax that turned out to be nothing but hot air. And maybe by now we're all thinking the same thing. At least they admitted it was a hoax, eventually, although they soft-pedaled their own complicity. Don't expect them to do anything remotely like that when it comes to any of the coup attempts to overturn the 2016 election, from Russia, 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 to the latest fake news Ukraine barrage, and impeach, impeach, impeach for any reason we can come up with. On then next to a few other international stories that aren't going to get much play in the United States before we talk about the inevitable move towards Civil War 2.0, now being widely reported on a number of fronts. How about this one from China, where the first protester in Hong Kong has now been shot in the chest during National Day demonstrations, coinciding with the 70th anniversary of the Communist Party rule in Red China. It's unclear yet, say reports, whether the individual survived the shooting or exactly what happened. There were also a couple of, well, supposedly police officers, but maybe Chinese military, and it's of course hard to know the difference, were injured. There were the increasingly usual rock sticks and tear gas. Other live rounds were fired, called warning shots by the press, during the incident, and once again the Hong Kong mass transit system was shut down. Says a related story, courtesy of Reuters and Zero Hedge, as protests again erupted over the weekend, there are new reports now that Beijing has quietly doubled troop levels in the city ahead of that 70th anniversary of communist Chinese rule, as they brace, and it looks like it's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, for a worst-case scenario. Not to be upstaged, however, the huge military parade, celebrating 7 decades of totalitarian communist rule, featured 160 aircraft, 580 pieces of equipment, and 15,000 troops, and it enabled President Xi to show off their new technology, including the Dongfeng 41 ICBM, which they claim can hit anywhere in the U.S. within just 30 minutes, their sub-launch JL-2 intercontinental ballistic missile, and their new DF-17 hypersonic missile. Said President Xi, quote, no force can ever shake the status of China or stop the Chinese people and nation from marching, and here it sounds like he's channeling Obama, doesn't it, forward. And somehow or other, this just sounds ever so apropos. Christians aren't allowed to raise flags over Boston, but the Communist Party of America, well, let's see here, they call themselves the Chinese Progressive Association, but it's the same thing, did manage to raise the flag of Communist China over Boston City Hall. So at least some of their city council is really excited about 70 years of communism over there, coming soon to a theater near, at least Boston, it would seem. You may recall, notes the story from Brown Journal, that 2 months ago a Christian organization had to sue the city of Boston because they were not allowed to raise a Christian flag at the very same site. But Boston, of course, does allow other political ideologies, primarily way, way left, to be raised over that same site instead. And just to show that mass murder isn't limited to gun-free killing zones in the United States, a crazed student burst into a Finnish college inside of a shopping mall at Kuopio, Finland, according to RT, killing one and injuring at least 10 others, wielding a sword and indiscriminately stabbing his classmates. He also managed to set off some firebombs during the bloody rampage, but was finally stopped by, guess what, an armed police officer. He was shot and taken into custody. Police say they'll release more information later. Probably not including whether he was shouting Allahu Akbar in the process. Here's one that your host saw from a number of sources over the weekend, and as several of them pointed out, you're probably not going to see it on the Criminally Negligent Network anytime soon. The report came out on Thursday indicating that the transgender-enabling puberty-blocking drug called Lupron has now resulted in literally tens of thousands of serious adverse reactions in patients, including, are you sitting down, more than 6,000 deaths. Said the Christian Post, between 2012 and June 30th of this year, the FDA documented almost 41,000 adverse reactions suffered by patients who took leuprolide acetate, a.k.a. Lupron, used as a hormone blocker. More than 25,500 reactions logged in the 5 years prior to 2019 were considered serious, including 6,370 deaths. And the outlet explained that Lupron is being prescribed for off-label use in children who've been diagnosed with gender dysphoria because it can delay the onset of puberty, despite the lack of any formal FDA approval for that purpose. And this next story, too, falls into the category of, gee, do I really even want to mention that one? But somehow or other, folks, given the thread on all of these stories, it just plain fits. New Netflix movie, says Mike Adams for Natural News, fantasizes about time-traveling far leftists who can carry out the pre-crime murder of patriots. You know, people that can read the Constitution and the Bible before they even get around to doing it in order to prevent an American uprising against globalism. Yes, here's your basic leftist Hollywood fantasy brought to the silver screen. Evidently, that movie about just plain hunting conservatives was a bit too tame. Says Adams, as the delusional insane cult of liberalism continues to infect every institution across America, Hollyweird has been transformed into the place where left-wing fantasies are played out on the big screen to satisfy the delusions of the brainwashed masses. The latest example of left-wing fantasies brought to life is found in a new Netflix feature movie called In the Shadow of the Moon, a film which imagines time-traveling liberals who wear Antifa hoodies, what else, murdering patriots across America, following a pre-crime kill list that includes a concert pianist, a grill cook, a bus driver, and other people who haven't yet at least done anything wrong. But eventually, it seems, they might have put on a MAGA hat. The pre-crime murder spree, says Adams, is intended to execute these people before they start an uprising against globalism. And the entire point of the film is to make sure that all of those people who defend America as it once existed are killed, ensuring that globalism succeeds in overrunning this nation and enslaving humanity. Yay! I'm sure that's how the film ends. Says Mike Adams, with all the usual smears you'd expect from a left-wing Ministry of Truth-style propaganda operation, after all, even the New York Times now fabricates total fantasy to try to destroy the president, this new film conflates patriotism with white supremacy and anti-globalism paranoia. Hey folks, are you old enough to remember when this type of anti-utopian film actually warned against the kind of dystopian tyranny they're now pushing? And furthermore, all the typical symbols of patriots are demonized as well in the film, including the American flag, the dreaded black rifles known as AR-15s, and resistance against any form of global tyranny. Because the one thing we know for sure is that in the new America with a K, the ends justify the means. which brings us, of course, finally to the latest iteration of the ongoing coup attempt against the duly elected President of the United States, and, in the process, the attempt to foment Civil War 2.0. It's gotten to the point where even Rush Limbaugh is finally on board with it. In his show late last week, Limbaugh actually said the Democrats have declared war against President Trump and those who support him, adding that instead of bullets, they use lies. Quote, "The media is not media," said Limbaugh. "It's just Democrats who work in the media, and the whole group of them is aligned. And what we are in the middle of now, folks, is a cold civil war." And he's right, even if a little bit late to the party. Quote, "Their careers, their fortunes, their corruption. There are these terribly big stakes involved here for these people, and Trump is on the cusp of overturning it and exposing it," unquote. And, well, we'll see whether that's A, allowed, and B, what he's really going to follow through and do. But he did say it's the same people, the same scam, the same objective, which is, again, obvious at this point. In a related story, too, he also dished out some dirt on the traitorous former director of the CIA, Obama's man, John Brennan, saying, "Well, folks, I'm sorry. Let me give you the details," referring to Brennan having traveled to the Ukraine on a fake passport. "John Brennan, Obama's director of CIA," he said, "went to Ukraine under a fake passport so that nobody would know it was him. Fake name. Can you do that? Can you get a fake passport?" "No, John Brennan can, CIA director. I'm surprised he even needed a passport," said Limbaugh, "but he went under a fake passport to get opposition research on Trump." Noting that while the Obama regime initially lied about Brennan's visit, they were forced later to admit the report was true after the evidence emerged. And notice, folks, how they're getting better on that score. Now they can pretty much prevent the evidence from ever emerging when it comes to, well, let's just say, more recent, really high-profile acts of treason and sedition. And this is the same guy, he noted, who over the weekend encouraged every deep stater to come forward and blow the whistle or make something up when it comes to Trump. And here he quotes the evil Brennan himself. "There's no limit on the number of individuals who can use the whistleblower statute. And now that Barry's gone," your host interjects, "whistleblowers, the real ones, don't have to worry about being arc-incited anymore, and the fake ones don't have to worry about even having their names exposed." All of which leads me now to the president's response to the coup itself, a story that now continues to have legs. On Sunday morning, as you may have heard by this point, Pastor Robert Jeffries, high-profile evangelist from the Southern Baptist First Baptist Church in Dallas, appeared on Fox News Channel's Fox and Friends show and made some pretty tame comments. They're the kind of things we've been talking about here for at least a couple of years now. Referring to the continued leftist attempt to literally burn down the Republic, he said, quote, "Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats can't put down the impeachment match," adding, "They know they couldn't beat him in 2016 against Hillary Clinton, and they're increasingly aware of the fact that they won't win against him in 2020, and impeachment is the only tool they have to get rid of Donald J. Trump." And the Democrats, said the high-profile Trump supporter, "don't care if they burn down and destroy this nation in the process." For his part, President Trump raised more than a few rhino eyebrows, as well as, of course, the usual denizens of the swamp and far left, when he retweeted the entire sequence from Pastor Robert Jeffries, especially the part where the pastor says he's never seen evangelical Christians more angry over any issue than this attempt to illegitimately remove this president from office, overturn the 2016 election, and negate the votes of millions of evangelicals in the process. "They all know," continued Jeffries, "that the only impeachable offense that President Trump has committed was beating Hillary Clinton in 2016, which he said is the unpardonable sin for which Democrats will never forgive him. And if they're successful," he noted, and this was the headline from, for example, the Daily Mail, "it will cause a civil war-like fracture in this nation from which our country will never heal." That, in turn, triggered some rhinos in the left-leaning Congress that I won't even bother naming, who seem to think that the very idea of mentioning where the nation is so rapidly and undeniably headed is some kind of crime, and how dare you actually say it out loud. But I guess if pointing out real crimes, like the ones that Joe and Hunter Biden committed in the Ukraine and China and obviously elsewhere, is somehow now a crime instead of actually doing the dirty deed itself, we shouldn't be surprised. Next stop, some of the real criminals openly trying to get away with destroying the Republic, like Adam Schiffless, chairman of the so-called House Intelligence Committee, and how's that for a parody, who had no qualms about lying through his teeth in his opening statement prior to the testimony of Acting Director of National Intelligence, Joseph McGuire. What he did, folks, was make up an entire conversation out of whole cloth, right from the get-go, implying, and the news media drank the Kool-Aid without seeming to care whether it was true or not, that the president was the one committing the crimes rather than the Biden godfather and son pair. Because, you know, the only real crime in America with a K is trying to get someone to investigate actual crime. Says the natural news coverage of the story, everyone in the room had read the transcript of the telephone conversation between President Trump and Ukrainian President Zelensky, and everyone knew that what Schiff said he was reading from the transcript of the telephone call wasn't, in fact, in the transcript. So how can it be that the chairman of a House committee, in a room full of newspersons and TV cameras, had no qualms about intentionally misrepresenting the written record in order to make it conform to the lies that the far-left socialists and their stable of corrupt prostitutes had spread about a telephone call revealed by an alleged whistleblower who turns out to be a likely Democrat CIA operative and who even admits it was nothing but hearsay and he heard it at best secondhand? In other words, folks, if we still had a rule of law, this crap wouldn't even be admissible in a court thereof. Here he quotes Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, who said, "When I was a member of the congressional staff, any representative who dared to so dishonor a committee of the House, and the House itself, as Schiff has done, would have been reprimanded, brought before the Ethics Committee, and guess what, folks, that doesn't exist anymore, now does it, and forced to resign. But the Democrats have ground integrity under their heel in their fanatical determination to prevent Trump's re-election." So following Schiff's open lies in his opening remarks and his claims of numerous falsehood about President Trump's call with the Ukrainian president, in spite of the actual transcript being available at that point, President Donald Trump took to Twitter on Sunday night, too, to announce that he wants the so-called representative, quote, questioned at the highest level for fraud and treason. And okay, I've heard a number of people point out that probably what Schiff is really guilty of is closer to sedition, undermining the government, but I'll go with treason too, because what he really is doing, whether we like it or not, is making open war against the United States, and particularly the people thereof, that he took an oath before God, that he and all those others participating with them have so clearly ignored, or literally turned on its head. The president said the following, "Like every American, I deserve to meet my accuser, especially when this accuser, the so-called whistleblower, represented a perfect conversation with a foreign leader in a totally inaccurate and fraudulent way." Then, he continued, "Schiff made up what I actually said by lying to Congress," Trump tweeted. His lies were made in perhaps the most blatant and sinister manner ever seen in this, I'm going to put it in here, once great chamber. He wrote down and read terrible things, then said it was right from the mouth of the President of the United States. I want Schiff questioned at the highest level for fraud and treason. And then he went on to talk about the so-called accuser, a.k.a. whistleblower, still not named, note, who presented second and third-hand information, and also the person who illegally gave that information firsthand, which was largely incorrect anyway, asking, was this person spying on the U.S. president? Back when we had a rule of law, of course, there would have been consequences for that. And furthermore, folks, other congressmen have been arrested in U.S. history for far less than what Schiff and his cohorts are continuing to do. And didn't the House of Representatives once have a sergeant at arms? What's going on there? Related story, and this is pretty interesting. Jim Kunstler deserves some credit for pointing it out, and Tyler Durden for linking to Kunstler.com. Someone in impeachmentville, he begins, is not paying attention. Of course, diverting the rubes is exactly the point of the latest CIA operation to negate the 2016 election. Has nobody noticed, though, that there actually is a treaty between the United States and the Ukraine, signed in Kiev in 1998 and ratified by the United States Senate in 2000? It's called an agreement on, quote, mutual legal assistance in, are you sitting down, criminal matters. And what, he asked, don't Nancy Pelosi, Schiff for brains, and the news media not understand? Because the treaty is, quote, self-executing, here he's quoting from the title and the document itself, providing for a broad range of cooperation in criminal matters. Mutual assistance available under the treaty includes taking of testimony, statements of persons, providing documents, records, articles of evidence, serving documents, locating or identifying persons, hey, we know where Hunter and Joe are, transferring persons in custody for testimony or other purposes, well, you get the picture, even though what now passes for news media doesn't. How, asked Kunstler, does this not permit Mr. Trump to ask the president of the Ukraine for assistance in criminal matters arising out of the so-called collusion with Russia, as specified within the scope of Robert Mueller's special prosecutor activities? For example, the matter of CrowdStrike. Uh-oh, and those are the two words, or one word, depending upon how you spell it, that the waste stream and the deep state absolutely positively don't want you to hear. And here, author James Howard Kunstler summarizes what we currently know. Under the year 2000 treaty, Trump was well within his rights to ask the new president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, for assistance on all of that. And also, the question of former Vice President Joe Biden's leaving USA to Ukraine in his demand to fire the prosecutor investigating his son's company, Brisma Holdings, that just happened to hire his son to a $64,000 a month seat on the board of directors not long after the younger Mr. Biden was kicked out of the U.S. Navy for cocaine use. Kicked out of the U.S. Navy Reserve for cocaine use. So yeah, we've established he was a really sterling fellow. And all of that ought to be self-evident. But guess what, folks? There's clearly another agenda at play here. Finally, asked Kunstler, just how long do you suppose this charade of protecting the so-called whistleblower's identity is going to have to go on? All of which leads me to a really great piece by the former presidential candidate and congressman from Texas, one of the last few actual constitutionalists in either House of Congress, Dr. Ron Paul, who writes for his own institute about the so-called impeachment effort, more likely a CIA coup, saying, you don't need to be a supporter of President Trump, and Dr. Paul has certainly been one of his critics, to be concerned about the efforts to remove him from office. Last week, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced impeachment proceedings against the president over a phone call made to the president of Ukraine. And then he goes on to talk about the call and the Biden crime family and so forth, noting that Democrats who spent more than 2 years convinced that Russiagate would enable them to remove this president from office, only to have their hopes dashed by the Mueller report, now seem to believe that they have their smoking gun in this phone call. Is this about politics? Says Dr. Paul, of course, yes, but there may be more to it than that. It may appear that the Democratic Party, he writes, furious over Hitler's 2016 loss, is the driving force behind this ongoing attempt to remove Donald Trump from office, but at every turn, we see the fingerprints of the CIA and its allies in the U.S. deep state. And this is quite an admission coming from a former congressman, because Dr. Paul has always been very careful, while he understands what's going on, not to allow himself to be branded as a conspiracy theorist. But I guess by now, all bets are off. In August 2016, he continues, a former acting director of the CIA, Mike Morrell, wrote an extraordinary article in the New York Times accusing Donald Trump of being an agent of the Russian Federation. Morrell was clearly using his intelligence career as a way of bolstering his claim that Trump was a Russian spy. After all, the CIA should know such a thing. But the claim was a lie. Former CIA Director John Brennan accused President Trump of treason, and he ought to know because he's the one that's really guilty of it, your host interjects, and of being, quote, in the pocket of Putin for meeting with the Russian president in Helsinki. How dare a president think he can meet with a foreign head of state? And accepting his word that Russia did not meddle in the U.S. election. To this day, says Paul, there's yet to be any evidence presented that the Russian government did interfere. Brennan openly called on so-called patriotic Republicans to act against the man he referred to as a traitor. Yeah, pot meet kettle. And Brennan and his deep state counterparts, James Comey at the FBI and former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, launched an operation using what we now know as the fake Steele dossier to spy on the Trump presidential campaign and even attempt to entrap Trump campaign employees. Do you notice a pattern here, says Dr. Paul? Now we hear that the latest trigger for impeachment is another CIA officer assigned to the White House who filed a so-called whistleblower complaint against the president over something he heard someone else say that the president said in a phone call to the Ukraine. And yeah, does that sound like hearsay? Shockingly, according to multiple press reports, the rules for CIA whistleblowing were just recently changed, dropping the requirement that the whistleblower have actual direct first-hand knowledge of the alleged wrongdoing. So just before this complaint was filed, says Paul, the rule change allowed hearsay or second-hand information to suddenly be acceptable, which he notes does seem a bit strange. And as it turns out, the so-called whistleblower working for the CIA, lurking around the White House, got the important things wrong, because there was no quid pro quo discussed, and there was no actual request to investigate Biden or his son. Even though, as we've talked about just in the last little while, folks, the Senate-ratified treaty back in 2000 would have made such a thing perfectly appropriate. Well, says Dr. Paul, suddenly the Democrats have come out in praise of whistleblowers. Well, not exactly. Pelosi still wants to prosecute actual whistleblower Ed Snowden, but she's singing the praises of this fake CIA swamp rat. And meanwhile, remember, Senate Minority Leader, the infamous anti-gun, anti-Bill of Rights Senator Chuckie Schumer, once warned Trump that, quote, if you take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. And even Dr. Paul now openly suggests this just might be a CIA coup.